Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
And a good Monday to you. Hello there. How's it going? Heath flying in for Chuck today. King taking a quick day. He'll be back in the fold tomorrow. Everything's good. No tonsil inflammation or anything like that. He's feeling fine. Just sometimes you want to take that weekend and make it a three-day weekend. And so he'll be back in the mix tomorrow. It is a heck of a week. I'll tell you this. We have got so much going on. Like in a typical week, maybe this time of year you've got some transfer news. Maybe. But that's before the portal went wide open, and now anything could happen all the time. You know, it used to be maybe, you know, some guys that were backups, they have some talent, they're tired of waiting, they're going to move to a different team. You get some of that. Now, if I told you during the show, even an SEC team, that some starting player was suddenly in the portal out of nowhere, you wouldn't be shocked. Maybe a little surprised, depending on who it was, but you wouldn't be shocked. I mean, even if a Georgia, Bama, LSU, there's always a chance somebody somewhere is waving enough money in front of somebody that they might decide to move. So you're constantly keeping an eye on, is something happening with the portal? And today we've got Bama making some news out of the portal as they land the Grozo Award winner. We told you about that last week. It was not a surprise that somebody who was a Grozo Award winning kicker at a MAC school would feel like he could probably do better for himself than that. And so Alabama lands him. We'll talk more about that with an Alabama guest later on in the program. But you got portal news. That's plenty. Oh, yeah. We've got all the spring games that are wrapped up now. Everybody in the SEC, even the new guys, have wrapped up their spring. That's not the case for everybody. There's actually a lot of Big Ten programs and some Big 12 programs that are still taking it another week. And then, of course, Washington is the way outlier by waiting into May to have their spring game. But everybody in the SEC now has wrapped it up. So, again, you got five more teams that are having those meetings today with their players and kind of getting the feedback from the coaches and vice versa on whether or not they're going to go. So we got news coming down on that front. And we'll look at some of those spring games as the show goes on from A&M and South Carolina, find out what got learned, if anything, at those places, both of which had some pretty high-profile new people doing some stuff, whether it's A&M with a completely new staff or South Carolina with Lenora Sellers in the quarterback role for the first time as the guy. And so what did that look like? So we'll talk to some guests about that as we go too. But again, spring games, that's a lot. Oh yeah, then there's the NFL draft and everything that comes with that, which even if you're somebody who says, well, I'm a college fan, I don't care about the NFL, you still care about the college and the NFL. You still do, because it matters for your recruiting. It matters for your development of players. It matters for what you can sell kids in the portal. Even if you don't care what they do when they get to the NFL, you care about how they do Thursday, Friday, Saturday in the NFL drafts. We got that too. And oh yeah, we got FSU and the ACC still trading legal jabs, in this case in a court in Tallahassee, and you never know what's going to come out of all that. So again, it is a loaded week. We're glad you're here with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. I want to start with one thing, though, that got my attention over the last few days. It was a story The Athletic ran, and it is a really interesting piece to me in that it brings up the question of how do you build a successful team now? What's the correct answer? We know what historically the correct answer has been, but as noted, with the portal, now things have changed a little bit. Now that kids can transfer, it's not just the portal, it's the fact there's no restrictions of any kind on the portal. So we have literally seen guys come to a school, go to spring practice, bounce to the next school. I was just looking at a list of the current top 20 players in the portal. One of the guys listed in the top 10 is that running back from Louisville who literally came in for spring, was the player of the year in the MAC, came in for spring at Louisville, didn't feel like he was going to be the starter, and said, I didn't come here to back anybody up. I'm back in the portal. So, I mean, a guy who literally has already transferred once this calendar year is already back in the portal. It is impossible now for any coach, even if you got the wallet helps, but the wallet doesn't guarantee. Kids still want to play. I'm pretty sure that dude was going to do okay at Louisville financially, but he thinks he'll do as well or better somewhere else. And more importantly, he wants somewhere where he's going to get the ball. Last year, he was player of the year in his conference. He's not viewing it as, hey, 10 carries in the ACC is pretty good. He wants a place he's going to get the ball. Maybe he finds it. Maybe he doesn't. I don't know. But that tells you it is pretty much impossible, even if you have financial resources, to be totally confident in what you're going to have for your personnel, even for a semester. So what's the right way to build? And what's interesting is that the notion of the 85 scholarship, people have talked about this. Does that mean anything now? You're only supposed to have 85 scholarship players, but any school that really wants to can have more than that because you can just hook a guy up with enough name, image, and likeness and enough other stuff that he'll be able to pay his bills. This used to be a problem. This used to be a real problem. You remember the Baylor fiasco? No, not that Baylor fiasco. The one before. No, not that. The other one at Baylor. Back in the day with the basketball coach. You remember that one? That fiasco was in large part caused because Dave Bliss and his staff at Baylor were trying to hide the fact that they had a player who had been there and at the school but was not on scholarship, and they had been funneling the money to him for him to, in effect, be on scholarship without literally being on scholarship. And because of another player's death, it was going to turn into something that they thought the investigators were going to find, and so they tried to frame the dead player as having been a drug dealer, and it unraveled and turned into a disaster for the staff anyway. But at its core, the thing they were worried, oh no, we can't have the NCAA finding this out, was that they were basically playing with an extra scholarship by having this guy be funded for his walk-on status. That used to be something you were scared of having get out. Now, it's not even as need to be a secret. The NCAA has no capacity to relate to NIL and say, oh, well, we don't believe this player legitimately has NIL. It might be obvious that somebody who's a backup offensive lineman probably isn't getting NIL on his own. Doesn't matter. They can't do anything about it. And they've thrown up their hands. So if you want to now, it'd be really easy to steer the NIL money to have 90 scholarships, 95, 100 scholarships if you really want to. What I thought was really interesting for this piece in The Athletic was that a lot of schools, the answer is, yeah, we don't want to. We don't want to have 100 guys. We don't want to have 100 different sets of NIL to deal with. We're not even going to give NIL to all 85. We're going to be focused on our very best guys. Maybe the top 50, they're going to get the NIL money. The other guys, I mean, it's not that we don't like them or anything, but we're not going to try and keep every last player on the roster equally treated or equally happy because some of them don't produce at the same level, and we won't be brokenhearted if they decide to leave. We're not trying to force them out, but we're not begging them to stay. And we certainly don't think we need to focus resources on having more than 85 because we've got enough guys that we think can play anyway. That's where it is at a lot of the top programs. So you're not seeing programs that we know financially could do this. Georgia, LSU, Alabama, probably just about anybody who's a high-end program in the SEC, if they wanted to, could steer enough money to be able to give themselves an extra 5 to 10 scholarships if they thought it was necessary. They don't. Meanwhile, you've got a guy like Matt Rhule at Nebraska who is saying, yeah, this university had success. This university built in part on this idea of having the big walk-on program. Remember, it used to be that for all practical purposes, Nebraska would have 125 to 130 players on scholarship because every county in the state of Nebraska could send a player there on scholarship. Now, not all of those guys could play at a high enough level to help Nebraska on the field, but they could turn into useful pieces in the practice field, have an extra bodies to work against for special teams and for a legit backup offensive line to go against in a scrimmage. That was helpful stuff for them. And so Rhule's saying, yeah, we're getting back towards that way. So while he can't officially flat out say, yeah, these are 10 to 15 quasi scholarships we're going to have in Nebraska, because he's not allowed to officially negotiate it, he says, yes, that looks like how it's going to go. That with the NIL resources they have, that they will likely have some kids that will stay there that would have otherwise left because they are not on scholarship. He's acknowledging that. And so we're about to see a real difference here. We're going to see Nebraska kind of programs, more development-based programs, programs that aren't necessarily expecting to land guys that come in and as a freshman immediately become a superstar. We're going to see one class of program that's like Nebraska, like Iowa. I'm not saying it's all going to be Midwest. It could be some SEC programs fit this model too. But you're going to see some programs that say, we're going to have more bodies, longer development time, and hope that being an older, experienced team and kind of growing our own in our system will make us better than some of these programs that are going to keep trying to kind of microwave it and bring in 25 new guys every year, not that are recruits, 20 to 25 new guys as transfers and hope that they can all mesh quickly and become a team. And basically 1 year at a time is how they make their roster up every year. Yeah, you'll recruit some high school kids and try and develop them, but if they don't, you'll just microwave it, grab some guy from a MAC school or whatever, throw him in as a sophomore or junior, and hope that it all gels. It's going to be really interesting to see whether or not one model clearly emerges as better than the other. Now, you lean towards the microwave model just because they're going to get more athletes. More of the top players are likely to be going to those kind of programs. But there's a reason that Michigan, without ever having had an elite recruiting class, won this last national title. They had a bunch of guys that had been together for a long time, familiarity with their system, and they treated things more like what we're hearing about the model for an Iowa or Nebraska going to be longer term than what the model has become for some of the other top programs. And I think there's probably going to be some more champions that will be closer to Michigan's model than this model of let's just grab a bunch of kids, shake them up, see what happens. It's going to be interesting to see where it all lies. Now, again, some teams aren't going as heavy on the portal. Texas, Georgia, not going heavy on the portal. LSU, Brian Kelly's already said, not us, not anything other than defensive tackle. We're not looking to go crazy on the portal. That's this year. We'll see next year and the year after whether or not they stay that way. But for the moment, there's some programs that are leaning more towards we're going to try and not have a huge amount of players from the outside. But some of them are saying, hey, bring them on in. Now, obviously, Lane Kiffin still is after anything and everything that moves. If it's a skill position guy, especially running backs, I think every running back in the country has Ole Miss on their list, even though they just got a commitment from one from New Mexico. I think everybody in the country that's a running back has heard from Ole Miss. He might have sent Bo Jackson a message, just to be sure. I mean, it's wild what some programs are doing. This extra 10 to 15 scholarships that some of these programs are going to be able to have, who's using it? How do they use it? How effective is it? 3 to 5 years from now, we might have some programs that we don't think this moment can compete that turn out to be doing a lot better than you would have thought. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Again, we're going to check in College Station coming up in about 15 minutes, find out what went down with the first Mike Elko spring there at Texas A&M. On the other side, though, the latest on what's going on with the Noles. They're going at it with the ACC, and the ACC has a kind of clever thing that they unveiled in court today. I don't know, maybe everybody knew, but I didn't know about it. Kind of a clever tactic. We'll explain coming up here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
The Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Thank you for hanging out with us here every day on the Chuck Oliver Show. We talk college football 52 weeks a year. All right, so FSU and the ACC, as always, we put in the disclaimer here. I have no legal training. Chuck, when he is on the program also, has never attended a single class in law school. So we can only judge by what people who do have that training are saying about the case, and then just facts as they get reported. FSU today is having the second hearing in their attempt to sue the ACC. Remember, the ACC has their suit going in North Carolina. FSU has their suit going in Florida. The ACC is trying to get FSU's suit dismissed, that the case needs to be heard in North Carolina because that is, after all, where the organization is based. And FSU agreed to abide by the terms of the organization. And so they're saying our disputes are settled in North Carolina, not Florida. Florida State is obviously looking for the home advantage of having judges that might be more inclined to rule based on what is good for a Florida university than what is good for the ACC. And that, you never know, you might have the alum connection. And that was the one thing this morning I thought was kind of interesting. The ACC's attorney in court turns out to be an FSU alum. In fact, not just an FSU undergrad alum, an FSU law school alum. And so she's hitting the court with, you know, look, I'm a Seminole, but this is a really simple case. This is a contract case. This is not about what's good for my school. This is about what the contract says. And what the contract says, she maintains, of course, is what the ACC would be advocating for. So kind of an interesting little twist today. I don't know. I'm sure she's a fabulous attorney, but the fact that she's also an FSU double alum, that the ACC got twist the knife at FSU in the court there, probably didn't hurt things anyway. Look, all I can tell you is that the people who look at this from the outside, who do not have a direct affiliation with either party, still seem to feel like the ACC holds the cards here. There are some things that could still prompt a settlement at some point, but it doesn't look like we're any closer to that happening in the near future. Because, again, you've got an ACC that has no interest in letting FSU or Clemson or anybody else get away. All the schools in the ACC know if those schools get away before ESPN renews their contract agreement with the ACC to take it all the way through 2036, there's no chance that they get enough revenue from FSU and whoever else leaving to make up for what would happen, which is ESPN would not renew that contract at the same level, and they take a huge hit. So you've got way more parties in the ACC who benefit from saying, no, 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 the agreement is what it is, and we're not changing a word of it, than there are people that say, well, let's get this over with, and let's end this annoyance. So I don't see how FSU gets any kind of settlement anytime soon. Can they win? Hey, your guess is as good as mine. I can only go by analysts. Analysts don't seem to feel like they've got the case that's good enough to win. But if they do, how long would it take to work through the appeals and everything else? Your guess is, again, as good as mine. But I did think that was interesting this morning that the ACC hit them with a double null there in court. There's a lot of schools that you look at and you say, man, I don't understand why they're not better. And for me, one of the ones that has always been at the top of the list of just, I don't understand how this school's not better. I'm not saying they should win a national title. I'm not even saying they should have won their conference every year. But I cannot ever figure out for the life of me how Arizona State is not at minimum every year bowl team and some years really, really good. Not some years as in once every 15 to 20. They've obviously had individual highlight years. 1996, they were one of only two undefeated teams at the end of the season. If the rules had been in effect that were in effect just a few years later, they would have played FSU for a national title in 96. As it was, they had to go to the Rose Bowl and they lost to Ohio State and Joe Germain and David Boston on a great play. But you know, look, they could have been a contender for the title that year. So they've had individual years like that, but they don't sustain it. It wasn't like the next year, Arizona State was right back in the conversation. Jake Plummer left campus and just like that, things went back to pretty mediocre pretty fast. And they've just never been able to sustain anything with consistency for the last 40 years. If you've ever been to Arizona State, you know it just seems on paper to have this amazing product to sell. It is not known as being an incredibly difficult academic university by college standards, so they have the ability to get guys in that some programs might not be able to. And if you're an Arizona State alum, that's not a knock. The history of the school is what it is. There's nothing wrong with being a university people can get into, but there's some places where you'd say, well, they can't take every athlete. That's an issue for some places, an issue for certainly a place like a Notre Dame that can't take every athlete that some of the schools they compete with can. Arizona State can basically take any athlete they want. So you don't have a lot of restrictions. You've got a warm climate. You've got a rapidly growing metro area that's already big to begin with. So anything, if you're somebody who's kind of a city guy and you want to have access to whatever it is that you think you need in a big city, you've got that. But Tempe is still its own little area that has a college feel to it. Not as much of a college feel as being in Athens or Auburn, but there is still a pocket of the, if you just want to have like the college bar hangout vibe, you still do have that. It's not a true city campus, but it's right there in the metro area for the city. So if you're somebody who still wants that, they've got you covered too. Again, warm conditions, well known for its social life, a lot of great looking women on campus, which never hurts with athletes. It's just always seemed like a place that should do so much better than it does. And Arizona has a lot of talent in state that has rapidly, as the state has grown, its high school football has grown. They're close to California. They're close to Texas. Heck, they're even close to Vegas. And Vegas produces a lot more talent now than it used to. Like, for no reason should Arizona State struggle in college football. And yet they do. And so today, I see this headline. I'm like, hey, they're starting to turn it around a little bit. The headline, Ryland Dillard Allen, Mountain Point's star defensive back, becomes Arizona State's highest-ranked in-state commitment since 2017. He had Nebraska, Texas A&M, UCLA, USC, and Washington offers and more. And so I see, I'm like, wow, okay. Maybe the new coach, Kenny Dillingham, second year, he's making a little headway here. Now, look. He's a three-star. Now, there's nothing wrong with a three-star. But if the highest-ranked in-state commitment you've gotten at Arizona State in the last 7 years is a three-star, what are you doing? Maybe Dillingham could turn it around, but man, I just, that program, especially in the Big 12, I really do wonder if they can come close to finding their potential. Because there isn't, as we've talked about before, that one big program in the Big 12 nobody can get past. Oklahoma State this year is going to be a challenge for everybody because they've got a ton of experience and they've obviously got a coaching staff that's shown they know how to put together a pretty good team. So Oklahoma State's a challenge this year. Utah's probably a challenge this year. But there's not that program that you look at and you just say, you're in, you're out, they've got better resources than everybody. Arizona State might be able to get there eventually in the Big 12. I don't know. But man, when it's been 7 years and the best in-state player you signed is a guy that, well, you haven't signed him yet, but is a guy that's a three-star, that tells you a lot. All right, we continue after this here on the Chuck Oliver Show.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
With the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on here on a Monday. He's flying in for Chuck today. And of course, over the weekend, we had five more SEC spring games go down. Everybody has now officially wrapped up their spring, and so we said let's check in, let's see how some of those went. And one of them in particular that was going to be viewed with great interest was going to be at College Station. Mike Elko and his staff making their public debut in Kyle Field. So we said let's check in with our buddy Mark Passwaters from AggieYell.com to talk about it. Mark, how are you, man?
Hey, how you doing, Heath?
Great, Mark. Let's just start with the event itself. Again, the spring is not really about the spring game, but when it's the first time, there's a little more pressure to put on a show. So how'd everything land on Saturday?
Well, it's tough to put on a really big show when it rains, and the weather really stunk on Saturday. But all in all, for as far as spring games go, it was pretty good product, decently. Or really, I mean, they had only a minimum of penalties. Nobody got hurt. The running game looked good. The backup quarterbacks looked good. And, you know, Nick Scorton and Shamar Turner, the two defensive ends, really had great games. So, you know, you can't take much away from a spring game as long as nobody gets hurt. But, you know, just the fundamentals look good. And that's different from the last couple of spring games. So if you want to build off of something like that, you know, maybe it's just the simple building blocks are there.
For Mike Elko, again, he's trying to kind of see what he has. And then, of course, now the portal is open. And so he can choose to be as aggressive as he'd like to be with that. Where did he learn things that he needed to know? And where did he see things that he says probably he's going to have to go and do some shopping now?
Well, I think that you just take a look at the three guys that he had in over the weekend from the transfer portal. Keandre Lambert-Smith from Penn State, Solomon DeShields from Pitt, and they actually picked up a center from Utah. So I think those are the real three areas that they need to take a good hard look at. They need depth at linebacker. They definitely need depth at wideout. They're just thin there. They have talent, but they need numbers. And I don't think that they really know what they're going to do at center, because I don't think they know if Bryce Foster is going to play again. I don't know if he wants to. I don't know if they're really thrilled with him going off and playing, doing track when you've got a new coaching staff. So, you know, and honestly, the interior line wasn't very good last year. So they've made moves there. I don't think they're done. You know, the numbers crunch is still definitely there. But I think by and large, he's satisfied with what he has. But there are definitely those three areas where they want to at least add depth.
Yeah, you mentioned receiver. Jabre Barber got hurt earlier in camp and was reported to have surgery for a foot issue that's going to cause some time. Can they include him in the mix for the fall? Is it going to be one of those deals where he might play, but he might not be what they thought he would have been because of the time he's going to miss? How does that fit into the picture?
You know, I don't know if they actually have an idea yet on how long he's going to be out. Like you said, they have mentioned the concept of some time, you know, and I know that this is going to be months and not weeks. So I don't think he'll be ready to start the season. Maybe he will be later on, but that just adds impetus to the idea of bringing in some more experienced receivers, because even though Noah Thomas looked great on Saturday, Jadae Walker was a revelation last year. You've got Moose Muhammad and Mike Matisse. You know, outside of that, you know, you're looking at freshmen, and that's just not a position you want to be in, especially when three of them haven't even gotten to campus yet. So they definitely need to go out and get some guys.
Mark Passwaters joining us on the Duncan Newsmaker line, taking a look at Texas A&M from AggieYell.com and our Truist reporter for them. Mark, with regards to the offense, Colin Klein comes in, a lot of fanfare there. How much did they show? We know what Klein did at K-State. We don't know if what he's going to do at A&M is going to be identical, because different personnel, different conference, you might want to do some different things, even though there'll obviously be some things that carry over. How much was he willing to show? How much so far have you gotten a handle for what he wants to do with their personnel there?
Well, I think that he feels like he has the ability to be more versatile than he was at K-State. He's definitely got more talent. They went out and got a couple of very good tight ends through the portal, and they'll have Donovan Green back as well, and that's a big plus. But I think that what we saw wasn't much, and that's by design. They're still trying to implement things, and you want to keep it vanilla as it is. But, I mean, still people were singing hallelujah because there was motion. There were receivers moving. It wasn't just get in the position, stay there, and then just go on the snap like it was with Jimbo. So, you know, I think that, you know, there's just an idea that this may be a more modern product and that they're going to get more guys involved. And that's just a step forward from where it's been the last couple of years.
Is the expectation also that the tempo is going to go up a lot? Because that was one of the knocks, even back in the FSU days on Jimbo, was that it's great that he wants to make sure that everything is exactly so. But when you are playing offense, it's not that you have to be up-tempo all the time, but you can't be slow. Defenses have gotten too good at reacting to what you're putting out there. And Jimbo just seemed to never be willing to change because Jimbo's just a stubborn dude, it appears. But that I have to imagine is a focus. Not that they're going to try and be a blur tempo, but not that tempo either.
Well, I think the biggest thing is they're going to have a better tempo getting the plays in. I mean, A&M had so many false starts because they were rushed, and you know they're moving at the very last moment. Delay of games or timeouts because the play wasn't getting in. On the other hand, you know, this seems like the operation's more crisp. And I do think that there will be more tempo in terms of getting, you know, the plays off. But I think that they'll also have the ability to vary. And it never seemed like Jimbo's group had that ability. They could go up tempo for a couple of plays, and then it would just go back to the slow plotting aspect. But I think these guys, if tempo was required, they can do it. If they want to slow it down and try to grind things out, they can do that too. And I think that, you know, just the general mindset that Klein brings compared to Fisher allows that to happen. And, you know, it just is imparted better for the players to be able to do it.
We've obviously focused a lot more on the offense because that's where a lot of the knocks have been. Defensively, what Elko's trying to do, how'd that side of the ball look?
Well, I'll tell you what. Up front, they look really good. Scorton is really, really impressive. This is a guy that was all Big Ten last year, and that was not hype. He is legit. He had a great spring game, and he's just looked good from day one. Shamar Stewart has put on some really good weight. He's just absolutely ripped. I think that he'll be the guy on the other side from Scorton. And Mike Elko said on Saturday that those two guys could be the best defensive end duo that A&M's had in a long time. And it hadn't been a long time since Miles Garrett and Deshaun Hall were there. So, you know, that's saying a lot. They also have Cassius Howell, who was a Bowling Green transfer. This guy's got tremendous speed off the edge. They're going to have DJ Hicks and Shamar Turner in the interior. Honestly, I really think their biggest issue up front is just going to be depth. They've just got to go get a couple more guys, especially in the middle. And if they can do that, they're going to be stout. And the corners look good. The safeties look good. If you get some depth at linebacker, maybe another starter to go next to Torian York, that is a very good defense that just might need a couple more bodies to back the starters up.
At this point, I know it's probably time for him to have meetings with kids and whatnot, so it will probably shake out a little more as the week goes on. Who else is going to get into the portal that maybe was told, look, you're probably not going to get a lot of playing time. It would benefit you to get in the portal. When the numbers shake out, though, once they've had time for that part of the process to play out, any rough feeling for about how many spots they might have to go try and add?
Well, right now I've got them at around 86 or 87 scholarships. And they're going to have obviously going to have to cut some guys, or some guys are going to have to come to the realization this just isn't going to work for them. So I think they've got a center, so that's a step forward. They're looking for at least one linebacker, and they're looking at probably two wide receivers, and then, you know, if there's somebody out there who just really blows them away, They may try to make room for that. But that's about where it stands at this point. You got to go get a linebacker. You got to go get some wide receiver help. If you can get a defensive tackle or two as well, you know, to add that depth, then, you know, so much the better.
But we're talking more of a rifle approach than a shotgun approach here. One target at a time, basically, is what we're looking at for A&M. Not a whole mass entrance like, say, a Colorado is trying to do.
Yeah, I think they had the grape shot in the spring or in the winter, and some of those guys just didn't work out. I mean, they came in, especially up front. I think that they had some offensive linemen that they thought might be able to help. And those guys came in and found out that the existing players, when they got a decent position coach, aren't bad. And two of them have already hopped back in the portal. So, I think that they are going to be a lot more selective, one, because they have to, and two, because I think they have a better idea of what they have now.
I'm curious, given what they've got on their schedule, because if you look at it, obviously Jimbo's gone, but the last few years – those opening games, and then obviously, famously, the App State game as well, they didn't exactly get off to really strong starts. Now, maybe when you know you've got an opponent that you should be able to show up and just kind of roll the helmets out there and you'll still win, maybe that's part of why you get off to a slow start. I don't know. But you look at this year, and it is the opposite of that. You got Notre Dame for the opener coming into Kyle Field, and then in week three, a road trip to Gainesville. And while Florida's obviously kind of a question mark as a program, it's still nobody's idea of a fun time to go play in Gainesville. I mean, better or worse, Elko's going to find out about his team really fast this year.
Yeah, I think that, you know, he's definitely going to have to get the kinks out before week one, because obviously having a top 10 Notre Dame team come in early on is not going to allow what you see from some teams where, you know, they're still having tryouts the first couple weeks of the season. A&M's going to have things put together pretty quick. And I think that's one of the good things about having a guy like Mike Elko, is that he is so structured, and he has, you know, a vision and plans that, you know, Fisher just didn't have. And maybe that'll have them better prepared for those, you know, big games the first two out of 3 weeks of the season, because if not, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how that goes, and I'm sure he will get a certain amount of grace from Aggies fans if they don't get off to the perfect start, because even you take it further, I mean, you've got a Missouri game in week six. It's not hard at all to imagine a 3-3 or even a 2-4 start for this team if some things go just a little wrong. He'll get more grace than certainly a Jimbo would have, but at the same time, you only got to get so much grace. They better at least look sharp if they don't win some of those games. So it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out. Mark, always appreciate the time. Check out his work, AggieYell.com, MBP, that's B, not V, MBP Rivals on Twitter. Mark, appreciate it, man.
No problem, T. Take care, bud.
There you go. Mark Passwater's checking in on the Aggies. I mean, that program, again, for the short term, not being Jimbo will be enough. Things just got so negative towards the end there that just being a guy who has shown you can run a competent program elsewhere and who did good work at College Station, short term it'll be enough, but you know it's not going to last long. And especially another factor that is totally out of his control, if Texas has the kind of year in the SEC that some people are projecting them to have, that their strength is at a pretty high point right now. And even though, yes, you're coming into a new conference and you got to show you can handle the consistency week in, week out of playing in the SEC that you didn't always demonstrate you had in the Big 12. Maybe they can't do it, but if they can, if the talent is in fact good enough and with an experienced quarterback and a really good play caller who does have some familiarity with this conference and Sark, if Texas comes in and year one is having a really nice year in the SEC, and the Aggies are kind of on the struggle train a little bit, I don't know how well that's going to go. Even if rationally they know they've got to be patient, that doesn't necessarily translate into action just because you know you should. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. And we will keep it cooking right here. College football conversation 15 minutes away. We'll take a look at South Carolina's spring game. Keep it right here.
College football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
The biggest thing I saw from Arch was something that we kind of really harped on with him about a week and a half ago, about just dialing into, you know, playing the play, keeping your eyes up. I think I talked about this last week. When he gets himself in trouble at times at quarterback is when he relies on his athleticism, which he has a ton of.
Oliver Show, Heath Klein in for Chuck. That is, of course, the voice of Steve Sarkisian talking about Arch Manning and what he did. An impressive showing for sure for him, as he was able to throw a touchdown on his first pass of the game. Only a couple of series for Quinn Ewers, and then it was basically the Arch Manning show. It's been interesting to see over these spring games which schools are trying to feature their backups and let them get some reps, and which ones it feels like maybe you're trying to keep things a little quieter, a little close to the vest, not have them do as much, maybe because there's almost that feeling, you know what? We don't need to do anything to excite somebody out there that might still be looking for a quarterback, we don't need to give them a reason to come looking for this guy. You know, Malik Murphy last year, part of what got him more visibility, he'd been a recruit of note, but what got him more visibility was a strong performance in Texas' spring game last year. But it was okay because he still stuck around for the year, and then you had Arch Manning waiting in the wings anyway. But if you're not a program like Texas that has that kind of talent stacked on top of each other, then you got a backup you think can play. You might want to kind of keep it quiet, not go out of your way to attract attention to it. But Texas, they're not worried that Arch is going to go anywhere before he gets that job once Ewers leaves. And so they let him go out there and show his thing. And look, I'm fascinated. That out of all the programs this year, that will be in my top three of programs I'm interested in. Just because you have a guy in Sarkisian who has never, as a head coach, shown the ability to have consistency with his team. It has never happened. Last year, they were good enough that even when they had those games where it could have blown up in their face like K-State, they got away with it, made the playoff, credit to them for doing that. But even in the playoff game, what happens? You know, you get way behind, you make a surge at the end, and you can't quite get there. But to be in the SEC, not to beat an Alabama in one game, but to be in the SEC and win in this conference week in, week out, you have to find a level of consistency that you're not going to always bring your best, but you got to bring good enough that you can handle the fact that you're taking on a Mississippi State team that you know you have better top-to-bottom talent than they do, but they've got a lot of energy because they're trying to take down Texas. You got to be able to week in, week out handle that. He didn't handle it in the Big 12 when there were programs that had a lot bigger gap in athletes with Texas than the ones he's going to see that are the quote-unquote, oh, you might look past them teams in the SEC. And I'm really interested to see how they handle that this year. Because on paper, if we're just talking about Texas's best against everybody else's best, there's not one program that you say for sure, no debate about it, is better than them. I think a lot of people would still give Georgia the benefit of the doubt. We don't really know yet what Alabama's final form will be, but I don't know that many people at the moment would give Alabama for sure a benefit of the doubt. LSU's got too many questions defensively to give it to them. Like they open the conference in most people's minds, I think, no worse than two on what their talent says they should be. And the question is, can you back that up? And that will be fascinating. So we have a little bit more information on the EA Sports College Football video game. Some of you are going to want to play this. Some of you are not. If you're not, at least I'm sure you want your school represented well. So for what it's worth, of all things, a public records request in Wyoming unveiled the details on what Wyoming submitted to the school and what they were asked for. They submitted the bucking horse statue, as well as the tradition of the players touching it before watching the game or beginning the game there at their stadium. They submitted three different songs. They submitted three different trophies. They were asked to submit headshots for players who are going to be participating in the game. And, quote, to accurately depict the student athletes who opt into the game, our team expects to create more human likenesses at one time than has ever been attempted in video game history. That's the quote from the folks doing this for EA Sports. They also say EA requested photos of the campus, of the stadium, of cheerleaders. Somebody needs to double check on that. Are we sure that that was a legit request or you got some perv working at the EA office there? But regardless, campus, stadium, cheerleaders, equipment and uniforms, locker rooms and mascot imagery, as well as historical photos of past and present players. Now, just because they asked for it doesn't mean that they will put it all in the game. But you listen to that list, and it does sound like they are going for the most comprehensive possible portrayal of college football. And you wonder, so like, I don't know, let's say you're playing with Ohio State. Are you going to say, oh, you know, you're breaking Archie Griffin's record or you're breaking Eddie George's record or whatever? Like, if you need photos of those guys, is that the kind of thing that they're going for, that, you know, you're going to at the end of the season have a list of who the all-time record holders are and how your players are doing and catching up to them? I don't know what they've got in mind. But for what it's worth, we're still waiting for the actual game itself. But it sure sounds like they're going to know that since this video game's been missing for so long and had such a groundswell of people for a decade wanting it back, you can't just bring it back sort of stripped down. You got to bring it back with all the bells and whistles. and that appears to be what they intend to do. We will check in and find out how things went with the spring game in Columbia, South Carolina. Coming up, keep it right here. You're listening to the Chuck Oliver Show.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.